The last 8 years, Mindy Kaling has co-produced, written, directed, and acted on the hit TV sitcom The Office. Along the way, she has been celebrated for her wit, style, and tweets. She has 1.5 million followers on Twitter. And we get to know Mindy even better in her new book of essays, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns? It's published by Crown Archetype, and I'm very pleased that it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
You're right. If you were always the cool, popular kid, especially in middle school, you're probably a boring adult.
Is that
based on some kind of scientific research?
Well, I just from the people that seem to be most into getting back to high school and doing the reunions, it seems to be the most popular people. And I think it seems they want to relive that experience again. And I get it. I would, too, if I was that popular in high school. But I feel a little bit sad for them, if I can be condescending.
Well, you're suggesting you were not popular. Was the fact that you were overweight and dark-skinned a factor in that?
I would say that I don't think the dark skin. I grew up in Cambridge, Massachusetts. If anything, that would have been kind
Liberal
of an interesting
Cambridge.
Thing.
It'd make you exotic.
Exactly. I definitely think the overweight didn't help, although the kids that I grew up with were very liberal-minded, raised by, you know, Harvard and Tufts professors and things. But I was not so much unpopular as I was just kind of ignored and overlooked.
So now you are quite popular as an adult. Was that almost guaranteed because you were overlooked in school?
I think there's a correlation. You know, when you spend all of your high school times dreaming about the future, you're just more prepared for your adulthood. And, you know, I studied, I, you know, get into a good college, and then that good college has opened up doors for me.
Well, most people who go into comedy were class clowns, but you say in this book you weren't.
I think I might disagree with you about that. I don't know that everyone who goes into comedy was necessarily a class clown. People that I met, the funniest people I know in Hollywood were largely pretty quiet. It wasn't until they got older and did plays that they found that they loved comedy or did stand-up, but that wasn't until they were in their early 20s.
Is that what happened with you? When did you realize that you had an affinity for comedy?
Well, I think it was when I was a teenager that I started and I'd always written little plays growing up on the typewriter at home. But then it wasn't really until late teenager when I was in college that I started writing sketches because I loved Saturday Night Live so much. So I kind of transitioned from being a fan of sketch comedy and Saturday Night Live into being, okay, I think I can do this. I think I could write this.
And have you looked back at your old sketches? Are they funny?
No, they're horrible. They're the worst. The most depressing day for me is going home and looking at any of my early writings. I have two sides of me. One is the Smithsonian side that says if I ever become really famous, this might become a fantastic – this is when I'm really feeling very high on myself. This might be a fantastic artifact. But know that I wouldn't want anyone to actually look at it because it's so awful.
Well, you could always burn them.
That's true.
You say that you used to hang out in the Barnes & Noble store on 72nd Street, the one that's now closed, copying screenwriting books. So did that help?
Absolutely. Actually, if it had not been for me copying all of the notes from various different How to Break It into Show Business books, I don't think I would have known to do a spec script, which is in Hollywood, you have to do a spec script in order to get read to, you know, basically audition to write for a television program. So I learned a lot from that Barnes & Noble.
Well, where did you start first in writing something like Matt and Ben with your friend Brenda Withers, or were you already pitching shows to television?
No, I started the play that I wrote with my friend Brenda was immediately after college. We had no connections to Hollywood or anyone who would listen to a show being pitched, but I started when I was in college starting to write sketch shows that my friends and I would perform in, and then it was several years after college before I even met Greg Daniels, who hired me in The Office, and it was during then that I pitched a television pilot with Brenda.
Well, Matt and Ben involved you and Brenda playing Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. How did you even come up with that idea?
Well, this was post 9/11, and Brenda and I were 21, and we didn't have jobs. And especially after 9/11, it became, if people remember, it was especially hard to find a job. And in fact, we couldn't even take the subway into the city for a couple of weeks. So we had all this time, just the two of us, hanging out in Brooklyn. And we've known each other for so many years and lived together. So we developed a kind of language. And we started doing, you know, just messing around on the when we waited for the subway, where I would take on the character of Ben Affleck for fun.
So you improvised it.
Improvised it, yeah.
And there is a big difference when you're creating the character and you're writing your own lines and when you're reading somebody else's lines written for you.
Absolutely. I mean, people can't see this, can't see this because it's radio, but I'm an Indian woman. I'm 5'4".
They've seen you on television.
They may have seen me on television, but it's the traditional auditioning process is not going to work out well for someone like me unless it's a absurdist take on Hedda Gabler. You know, like, for me, it's going to be largely that I write my own material for myself, which is fine because my biggest role models, whether it's, you know, Woody Allen, Tina Fey, even Tyler Perry, they write and envision their own roles, and then they succeed at that.
Or Ricky Gervais.
And
is that what happened when you made the deal to write for The Office? Do you write your own lines?
I do. You know, when I wrote, when I got hired to be a writer on the show, Greg Daniels, who hired me, who is an absolute complete genius, he actually put in the clause of my writing contract that I would act on the show. And so I didn't know that until the second episode of was filming, and he said, would you want to be in the background of a conference room scene? And then in that same episode, he said, would you mind if you had to have an interaction with Steve Carell where you slapped his character, Michael? So Greg really was the one that eased me into the transition into acting.
And you used Matt and Ben as an entree into doing all of this?
Yes.
I mean, because that was a success. People really talked a lot about that because it was hilarious.
Well, it was a very absurd two-person, two-woman, but actually technically two-man play that was what we wrote. And yeah, Greg saw me playing Ben Affleck and thought that I could play this character, Kelly Kapoor. So I really owe so much to him because that takes a lot of imagination.
We're seeing a lot of people breaking into show business by writing and producing their own things. And that wasn't the way in the past. I'm wondering if this isn't the acting version of the singer-songwriter.
I think that's very interesting. I mean, of course, I always long the princess side of me for, you know, the sort of Norma Jean, you know, MGM decides they find me in a shoe store and think I will be their next star, and they kind of take care of me and put me in roles. I mean, I love that. But that doesn't really seem to exist anymore. And I do think that the people that are making the most impact, the most immediate impact, are the ones who create opportunities for themselves.
We're seeing it also with your friend Lena Dunham, who wrote, directed, and starred in Tiny Furniture.
Lena is an absolute dynamo. When people say who inspires you, I think they tend to answer people who are older than them. But Lena, who's only 25, is an absolute inspiration to me. I saw her on Halloween. We were at the same party, and she came as... Everyone else is dressed in sexy costumes, trying to look as pretty as possible. And she came as Louis C.K. And because she just thinks Louis C.K. is so great. So she got a bald wig and a dumpy overcoat. And just she's just such a special person.
Brendan in the East Village writes, please ask Mindy about the collaborative process. She did great cartoons on her own at Dartmouth. And she works with Harvard Lampoon writers who are accustomed to bouncing ideas back and forth in a group. What's the team dynamic in the writer's room? Can you give us the taste of how a joke gets built?
Sure.
I wonder, do you know who Brendan is?
No, no, I don't. But I love how he knows my resume really well. I'd hang out with him anytime. I am actually a terrible collaborator. My personality, I'm a very confident writer, and I write in the book, I'm a huge hothead. So if people don't like my ideas, I tend to take that very poorly. And I think that's one of the first things that if any of the writers on my show heard this and I didn't cop to that, that would be irresponsible. But that being said, a lot of writers' rooms have that kind of personality, and that makes for good TV because you have lots of people with strong personalities who hopefully are funny, combating with each other, and you sort of...
Well, it's a kind of, can you top this?
Exactly. Very very competitive, but in a fun way.
And that's so a lame joke can then be improved and then be improved upon further, and we hope that it ends up being really funny.
Well, a lame joke is often met with a horrifying silence, and then hopefully you're rescued by someone pitching something funnier.
Well, my guest is Mindy Kaling. She's written a collection of essays called Is Everyone Hang Out Without Me and Other Concerns. It's published by Crown Archetype. Let's play a little clip from The Office where we learn something about Kelly Kapoor.
So then the next movie moves to the top of the queue. So number 5 becomes number 4, number 6 becomes number 5, number 3 becomes number 2, etc., etc. And let's just say that I just sent back Love Actually, which was awesome. And they sent me Uptown Girls, which is also awesome. But guess what? Now I want to see Love Actually again, but it's at the bottom of the queue. Oh no, what do I do? What I do is this. I go online, I go click, 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 and I change the order of the queue so that I can see Love Actually as soon as I want to. It's so easy, Ryan. Do you really not know how Netflix works?
I guess I forgot.
You're such a dip.
Ryan, well done. 2:42. Additionally, Pam, you win 10 because she said awesome 12 times. Mm-hmm. And Jim, you win 5 because she mentioned 6 romantic comedies.
They have been betting on how you would explain how Netflix works and whether you'd bring in a bunch of romantic comedies. Did you write that whole thing?
I didn't write that. I think Justin Spitzer wrote that, one of the writers on the show. But in listening to it, I forget that, you know, I'm 32, but the character I play sounds like a teenager to me. I had forgotten about that episode. And
well, you put on a different voice, don't you?
I think my voice is, especially
in that
clip.
A little more Valley Girl.
It's a little bit just more high-pitched, I think. But I think people do, there are some overlaps in our personalities, but I do think some people think I am very much like my character on the show.
Well, Kelly is the embodiment of shallow youth culture. Are you saying something about yourself?
Well, listen, I would be lying if I said that I didn't have some of the same preoccupations, but I do think that Kelly is a really fun character to write for, because if we want to get at pop culture references, and many of the writers on our show, we listen to radio, we read magazines, newspapers, we'd love to get that out as too much of it, and a show becomes dated. But too little of it, and it's not in touch. So we love Kelly's good character to get those ideas across.
Was there a similar character in the original British version of the show that Ricky Gervais created?
I don't think so. I think Kelly's one of the handful of characters that Greg kind of created originally. I mean, there's only 12 episodes of that show, so they didn't really have as much time.
My guest is Mindy Kaling. Her book is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns. How did you come to write the book?
I think that the book came about, to be honest, because in a writer's room with 18 people, your voice is heard. And I, you know, wrote 4 episodes of The Office last year while I was working on this and directed several of them. But I had just so much to say. And between Twitter and The Office, for whatever reason, it wasn't enough. And there's a lot about how people will ask me questions about how I got on the show and what my childhood was like. And I forget that as an Indian woman, being a comedy writer and comedy performer, it's more interesting than I necessarily think it is. I had a lot of stories that I thought I wanted to tell and people wanted to hear.
And we mentioned that you have, 1.5 million followers in your Twitter account. What makes for a good tweet? I mean, other than that you stay within the letter limit.
I think simple idea, concise, and not flagrantly self-promotional.
In the book, you mention having epic fights with Greg Daniels. What do you find about?
You know, in a show, the executive producer, Greg, the boss, or, you know, Paul Lieberstein now is the showrunner, they get final say. So you can fight passionately and fight and fight, but they get to pick what the final line is that gets shot. And they ultimately get to pick what airs. They edit it. So we'll have fights, creative fights. And I'm lucky that Greg even allows fights. Many people in that position will not. In fact, if I ever had that position, I'm not going to entertain fights with my lower level writers. It's my way or the highway. But Greg is not that way. I mean, Greg went to Exeter and Harvard, and his parents have a very, I think, their attitude about people's everyone should be heard. But I appreciate that he at least lets me fight with him.
Well, you mentioned if you become an executive producer. Aren't you becoming one for the show?
I'm an executive producer, yes, on The Office.
But then you also are developing your own show, aren't you?
Yes, yeah.
Was there a big problem when Steve Carell decided to leave the show, as big as when Charlie Sheen was dumped from 2.5 Men?
I think those situations are pretty different. I don't think it was a problem so much as, you know, seeing the atmosphere now without him on the show. I was talking to Ed Helms, who plays Andy, is that it's almost like our boss went on a business trip. And we don't know when he's coming back. I mean, our dad in our house went on a business trip. And, you know, even though Steve is, he's about probably 15 years older than the next youngest cast member. He's only in his mid-40s. But he really was like the father of the show. So without him being there, it does feel, I think for better. I mean, not for better, but it is nice. It's very mischievous around here. It's a generational thing. I mean, we do have Creed, who's like 9,000 years old. So it's not like we don't have older characters on the show, but it is a different feeling definitely the show since he's been gone. But we miss him, of course, so much.
The show is a single-camera show in the style of a documentary, and we're seeing that more and more. In the old days, there used to be three cameras.
Mm-hmm.
This was shot before a live audience with three cameras. What does this approach do that the older approach doesn't allow? Or, I mean, do you see this as an improvement?
Well, the biggest difference is that we don't have a laugh track. And I think there's a certain group of comedy writers around my age who have very... The laugh track has a very pejorative connotations, I think, to comedy writers of my generation. But that being said, some of the best sitcoms of all time had either a live studio audience or laugh tracks. Seinfeld, Cheers. So they're not necessarily inherently bad. They became bad in the mid-2000s and late 90s when you could tell that no one would have actually laughed at this in real life and that the television show was really underestimating the intelligence of the audience. So shows like Arrested Development, The Office, the original Office, you know, these are shows where you didn't need a laugh track, you could just enjoy them, and that showed a kind of confidence that I think people are attracted to.
And now we're seeing more and more single-camera sitcoms, 30 Rock,
mm-hmm,
New Girl, Curb Your Enthusiasm. A listener wants to know, where did you find Creed?
Creed was actually, at the beginning of the show, was cast as a stand-in, and he was hired to do background. I mean, he had a very colorful past. He was one of, I think, the original bassist in the Grassroots, which was a huge band in the 60s. Had a very colorful life, went to China, was kind of a movie star there for a while, lost and regained his fortune several times, and then finally ended up as in Hollywood as a background performer and stand-in. And then he was kind of popping on camera, and Greg said, want to have a couple lines? He did well, and now he's a series regular in The Office.
Mindy Kaling will be giving a talk and signing books tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Barnes & Noble store at 82nd Street and Broadway, crosstown from the one she used to hang out in. Her book is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me and Other Concerns. It is published by Crown Archetype. What a weird name, Archetype.
I think it's classy.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.